Dr. Fauci, it's a pleasure meeting you.
It's my pleasure.
Let's get straight to the point. I was telling people that I was a little bit concerned, and so I had a lot of doubts about the vaccine, and then I got this invitation to talk to you, so it would be really helpful for all of us to learn and to understand about the vaccine. First question, which of the COVID-19 vaccines have been officially approved by the FDA?
Three of them. One from Moderna, which is the mRNA vaccine, one from Pfizer, which is another mRNA vaccine, and the other one is from J&J, Johnson & Johnson, which is a little bit different. It gives the same kind of response, but it's a little bit different. So there are three vaccines that have gotten emergency use authorization from the FDA so far.
Okay, so I'm going to play here the devil's advocate. I asked if it was approved by the FDA, but I think that it's a different thing that to an emergency use authorization than an approval. So what is the difference between an emergency use authorization and an official approval by the FDA?
Yes, that's a very good question. So an emergency use authorization is based on the criteria if the benefit clearly outweighs the risk and that you get a good degree of efficacy and safety. The full licensure is when you follow it for a longer period of time and you get more information and data. But an emergency use authorization is really quite of an important step in the direction of getting it the official approval.
What is the medical and legal responsibility of the companies that are making the vaccines? What happens if secondary effects are seen, let's say, in 5 or 10 years? Can I sue the manufacturer of the product if it hurts me, or if there's long-term effects years down the road?
You know, there is a fund that allows the compensation for injury, but I have to tell you, Eugenio, that it's very, very, very unlikely that you're going to have an effect 5 or 10 years down the pike.
Yeah, I'm more concerned about the long-term effects, honestly. So, that's what I ask about the if I can sue a manufacturer, but because governments around the world are taking the liability, governments. But I'm talking about the manufacturer. If there's a problem, can I sue the people that made the vaccine, not the government, the people that made the vaccine? Because I've heard they are protected from liability. If they're not willing to stand for their product, or if I can't sue them, does that mean they're worried it's going to hurt people?
You know, they are very sensitive about hurting people, but you can sue anybody you want to sue. There's no guarantee, because it will be in a court that would decide whether or not you get compensation.
Now, I have friends that consider themselves very healthy. They say they don't need the vaccine. But I've heard that even if healthy people have a very low risk of dying from COVID, they should still get the vaccine so they don't spread the virus to people who might be too old or too sick to get the vaccine. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. So an example, if you're a young, healthy person, statistically, the chances are that if you get infected, you're not going to get seriously ill. You're not going to get seriously ill.
The news has reported that the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines are 95% effective. Does this mean that if I get the vaccine, I won't get infected with the SARS-CoV-2 virus?
That means that there's a 95% chance that you will not get symptomatic infection. Namely, that you won't get infected to the point that you get symptoms. But we are unsure right now what the protection is against infection, because it's conceivable that you could get vaccinated, get exposed, get infected, not know it because the vaccine is protecting you against symptoms, but that you could have virus in your nasopharynx, which is the reason why we say until we prove that the vaccine prevents transmission, that people who are vaccinated should wear a mask when they're near people who might be vulnerable to infection.
The vaccine lowers my symptoms, but it may not prevent me from being infected with SARS-CoV-2, which means there's a possibility that I can still spread the virus even after I receive the vaccine.
That's the reason why we, right. That's the reason why we ask you to wear a mask after you've been vaccinated.
Yeah, but that, because I've been reading, and I saw that you stop getting the symptoms, but you still can get infected and you can still spread it. So
right.
The main aim of the vaccines, if they neither stop you from getting the virus or transmitting it.
Right. The main purpose of the vaccine is to prevent you from getting sick.
So there's a possibility that the vaccine can turn people into what is called asymptomatic carriers, which means they don't have symptoms, but they're still contagious, correct?
Yes, we've said that. That's true. We won't know exactly how much until we follow these people for a considerable period of time.
Well, I've spent hundreds of hours plowing through the medical literature, looking at all of these things associated with this new type of shot. We can't even call it a vaccine because it doesn't meet any of the criteria, the legal criteria of what a vaccine is supposed to do. A vaccine is supposed to keep you from getting sick. This doesn't. And in their stated literature, they say it probably won't keep you from getting sick or prevent anything. It may decrease your risk of serious infections, and it may cut down the duration of your symptoms, but it in no way says anything about keeping you from getting sick, which is what a vaccine is supposed to do. The second thing is supposed to stop the spread of infection. Well, they've already said it doesn't do that. It's not intended to decrease hospitalizations, and it's not going to lower the death rate because the death rate is already extraordinarily low. So it's not a vaccine, and I'm encouraging everyone to understand the only reason they call it a vaccine is, number one, to get billions of dollars of funding. Number two, to get the protection of the 2005 PrEP Act as a covered countermeasure as a vaccine. And number three, we have a multi-generational indoctrinations that still, beyond all the work you've done, I've done, and others have done over the last 20 years, people still believe that vaccines are safe, thoroughly tested, which they're not. They think they're going to keep you from getting sick, which they don't. They think they're absolutely necessary, which they're not. And they don't cause any harm, which is a flat-out lie. And so the vast majority of people have been multi-generationally indoctrinated to the concept of vaccine. So when they hear about the COVID vaccine, they think, oh, it's just like another flu shot. Oh, doesn't coronavirus cause the flu? So this is just like getting another flu shot. And if I can get this shot, then I can just go back to normally living life, which you won't. They told you, you still have to wear a mask. You still have to social distance. You still have to contact trace. It's not going to keep you from getting sick. As a matter of fact, and I know that we'll talk about this throughout the rest of the show, I have mapped out 10 mechanisms of injury of how, when you get this injection, when you get this messenger RNA, or you get the spike protein that's already been genetically modified and made and inserted into an adenovirus for the J&J shot, when you get this spike protein antibody in your system, it will permanently and irreversibly change your immune system. And so I've mapped out 10 mechanisms of how that happens. And if I've come up with 10, there's probably more that I just haven't come across yet. And as I continue to investigate and research on the problems with this anti-spike antibody, which is the whole purpose of getting this injection, they're injecting something in you, a messenger RNA or a piece of protein, that is the spike protein. The whole purpose of having the spike protein in your circulation is to develop an antibody against that spike protein. In theory, that means the next time that you come in contact with a coronavirus, or specifically the SARS-CoV-2 virus, that antibody should block you from getting sick. Not only does it not block you from getting sick, the antibody itself is going to turn on your body and create havoc and massive autoimmune disease. When the antibody itself attacks your organs by molecular mimicry, but there are more and more physicians who are actually reading the medical literature and they're understanding the problems with this. I mean, it's not a vaccine, it's an injection or a shot. We call it a genetic modification technology. A lot of the mainstream press is saying, oh, you conspiracy theorists, anti-vaccine people are all saying that messenger RNA changes your DNA, and it does not. And guess what? They're right. It doesn't. Because how the process works, if you have DNA through an enzyme called reverse transcriptase, it makes a mirror copy of it called messenger RNA, which is what gets injected into your body. That messenger RNA, it goes through a system called the ribosomes and creates a protein. That protein can get reincorporated into your DNA by a process called transfection. So there isn't, so the messenger RNA can indirectly change your DNA, your genetics, but not directly. And I think it's, language is important. And everything that we say gets totally scrubbed and scrutinized these days. So I think to say it accurately is important. The messenger RNA that gets injected in with this shot co-opts a little piece of machinery in your body called the ribosomes. The ribosomes, think about the messenger RNA as having a recipe in it. That's what they, when they say it's been encoded, think about it as having a recipe. The ribosomes read the recipe. And as it reads the recipe, it makes this protein called the spike protein. That spike protein is supposed to be the same protein that's on the surface of the SARS-CoV-2 virus and is supposed to be at least similar to the spike proteins on the circulating coronaviruses that have been out there for more than 60 years. We know that there is somewhere between 35 and 45 coronaviruses out there, individual ones. We know that 7 of them can infect humans. And so this spike protein, what it does on the surface of the virus is it acts like a key and binds to something called an ACE receptor on the surface of your cells. When that virus takes its key and binds to this to the ACE receptor, it opens the door and allows the virus to go in and start to replicate. So what they're trying to do is to develop an antibody to that spike protein to block the key from getting into the lock so it can't get inside the cell and start to replicate. All that sounds great. It all sounds good in theory. The problem is that when that antibody to that spike protein is made, it's an abnormal antibody. It's called a non-neutralizing antibody because the antibody is not made to the entire virus. It's made to a small little piece called a spike protein. So it doesn't behave as the same way an antibody does that is to maybe measles or chickenpox or shingles or mumps or something like that. So that antibody has a lot of characteristics with it that causes a lot of problems. The other thing about an antibody, if people listening to this, if you're just listening, you're not watching, if you're just listening, visualize in your mind that what an antibody actually looks like is the capital letter Y. The two upper arms of the Y are called the FAB segments, Frank Appleberry, the FAB fragments. And the stem of the letter Y is called the FAC fragment. The FAB fragment at the top is what grabs hold of viruses or particles of bacteria or things and neutralizes it and makes it go away. But in this case, it's the FAC fragment, the stem of that antibody, that causes a lot of problems. For one thing, that stem of that antibody can bind to tissue in your lungs. It can bind to eosinophils, basophils, and other types of receptors that can cause anaphylactic shock. It can cause all kinds of problems with direct modification of your macrophages. It can cross-react with human tissue and create autoimmune disorders. So this antibody is the problem. Both the FAB portion and the FAC portion, both of those individually cause a bunch of different havoc. So the problem is that we are injecting mRNA that has a recipe in it to build a protein to make an antibody against the protein that is supposed to keep us healthy and keep us from getting sick. But instead, what we're doing is we're creating a process that antibody replication will be there forever because of B cell sensitization. And we have no idea how long the messenger RNA continues to make it be translated and create the proteins. We have no idea how long that protein lasts in your system. We have no idea how long the antibody is going to be around. We have no idea how long the antibody is going to last. We don't know how long they're going to continue to, the B cells are going to be active. We have no idea because we have no long-term studies. And every single one of those steps makes you susceptible to illness for the entire population for an unknown period, maybe the rest of your life. from something that is supposed to keep you from getting sick?
Well, I don't have time to get into all 10 of these, but I want to drill down on just a couple that I think I can explain pretty quickly so people listening can get their head wrapped around it. The first one is that the coding around the mRNA. So the mRNA, actually that little strip of genetic material, is pretty unstable. So in order to get it injected into your body, they had to put a wrapping, a lipid coating around the outside of it. So think of it like they put it in a bubble. And in that coating of that bubble is something called polyethylene glycol. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of other products that contain polyethylene glycol. I'm not usually a big fan of Wikipedia, but if you want to see a really down and dirty quick list of all the things that have polyethylene glycol in it, go to Wikipedia and put in polyethylene glycol. You'll be shocked. Because the medical literature says that people now have allergies or sensitizations to polyethylene glycol, that since in the 1960s, it was about 2% of the population. Now it's somewhere between 70 and 72%. And so when you get polyethylene glycol, when you're sensitive to that, that means you're allergic to it. When you inject this shot that has this polyethylene glycol on the coating on the outside of it, that is what is leading to anaphylactic reactions, shock, and death. That is the one in the primary of the 10 reasons. If you were bitten by bee stings, by several bees, maybe 10 years ago, and now you've been sensitized, your immune system's been primed, and then you can get another bee sting and you go into anaphylactic shock. So it's the same thing with the polyethylene glycol, which is a chemical that is in your body. It binds to albumin or other proteins, and then you make an antibody against that. So now you're primed. And as soon as the polyethylene glycol comes in through this shot, which is in both the Moderna and the Pfizer shot, it's one of the things that can cause anaphylactic shock. And all of these things that pictures we've seen on the internet of people with these rashes, these vesicles, these weepy rashes, these big reactions on their arms and things like that, it's an acute allergic reaction, most likely to the polyethylene glycol that you've been previously primed and sensitized to. The second reaction that I think is really, really important for people to understand is this whole concept of re-exposure. So when you get this, like I've already explained, you get the spike protein, you develop an antibody. It looks like the letter Y. You develop an antibody, the anti-spike antibody, when you get your shot. And these are all the people that fall into the category of, I got the shot and I'm fine. There's nothing wrong with me. I didn't have a reaction to anything. Until they get re-exposed to a coronavirus, and it doesn't have to be the SARS-CoV-2 virus, it can be any of 37 different coronaviruses that are floating around out there in the universe. That's what happens then is when you get exposed to that, when you get re-exposed, that's when you set up the autoimmune disease. That antibody can do one of two things. It can attach to the virus, bring it inside of the neutrophils, release the virus starts to replicate and goes into massive infection and a worse infection than you could have ever had without having the shot. The second, that's called antibody-dependent enhancement. And that's what happened in all of the studies that have been going on since 2005, because they've been trying to develop a coronavirus vaccine since 2005, because coronavirus flu has a big burden of illness worldwide. About 20% of influenza-like illness that happens every year is caused by coronaviruses, not influenza viruses. So as a vaccine manufacturer, there's a real need to get a coronavirus vaccine. They could never get it passed out of safety studies because all the animals that they tested this on, they tested a coronavirus vaccine on with the full virus. What ended up happening is that the animals, they tested on rats, rabbits, ferrets, hamsters, and monkeys. They all got extremely sick or they died. So the FDA would never allow them to move forward out of animal trials because they couldn't prove safety, because as soon as they got the shot, they were personally okay. Then they got re-exposed to the virus and they all got sick and died. So they failed on both safety and efficacy, because the whole purpose to get a vaccine from a pro-vaccine perspective is that when you get re-exposed, you don't get sick. They could never prove it. So they didn't have to redo the animal studies. They knew what was going to happen. And so they knew that this was the type of thing that was going to happen. So they just went right directly to human trials. This is a very well-designed genetic
modification tool. We can't, I don't like that some people have been calling it a therapy, because calling it a therapy implies that it does something therapeutic, that it does something good for you. One of the other things that that spike protein does is it can cross, that and the antibody can cross the blood-brain barrier, and it can convert two proteins in the brain and make those two proteins in the brain malfunction. When those proteins in the brain, and they have really long names, I'm not going to repeat them, just say the two proteins in your brain get corrupted. One can lead to ALS, and the corruption of the other one is frontal temporal lobe degeneration and dementia. Well, I'll finish up on the science of what I want to say about it today for the sake of time, because I want to address your issue that you've mentioned several times about cytokine storm, because that does happen, but not because of the antibody enhancement that we've been talking about for the first part of the show. One of the things that this antibody does, well, let me back up one step. The type of white blood cells that fight infection in your body, actually in your tissues, are called macrophages. Macrophages are kind of like little Pac-Men. They're little garbage eaters. So after when you've had, like, say, pneumonia, or you have an infection, say, in your hand, you have a deep cut and it's getting all pussy, it's the macrophages that are doing that work. There's two type of macrophages, and interestingly enough, they're called macrophage type 1 and type 2. Macrophage type 1 is when you initially get an infection, when you start to get sick, your body calls a bunch of macrophage type 1s to that pathogen, and the macrophage type 1 starts to release cytokines, because that's what they're supposed to do. The cytokines are pro-inflammatory, they cause a fever, they call in a bunch like natural killer cells, so that macrophage type 1s, that's what you want them to do, is they're there to fight off the infection. But as the infection starts to resolve and starts to go away, the macrophage types 2s come in, and they're like the firemen. They come into the fire hydrant and they put water on all of those hot cytokines, calm down that whole inflammatory process, and then they start to clean up the cellular debris and the mess. So the type 1 macrophages increase cytokines, which is what you want early in an infection, and type 2 macrophages come in kind of after the fact and kind of calm things down. But what this antibody does to the type 2 macrophages is it kills them. The FAC fragment of that antibody attaches to specifically to receptors on type 2 macrophages, so the firemen never show up. Cytokine storm goes on and on and on, and there's no off switch. So that's where I've come up with this expression saying that there's an on switch but no off switch. And that's how the cytokine storm happens. Because we kill off that antibody that's supposed to protect you, attaches to the M2 macrophages and makes them and inactivates them. They can't migrate into the area where they need to be. And so the M1 macrophages continue to create cytokines. Yeah, and the third thing is the new J&J shot, which we have very little information on, is what it does is it bypasses that manufacturing process of the messenger RNA creates a spike protein. It takes the spike protein and puts it inside of an adenovirus, which is a common cold virus, which then can bind to your cell and open up and deposit the spike protein antibody inside of your cell. The delivery mechanism is different. On the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine shots, they inject the messenger RNA that makes the protein. The J&J shot has the protein already embedded inside of an adenovirus, which binds to your cells and deposits the protein into your body where you start to make the antibody. Well, the end result is that all three of these shots end up putting spike protein antigens into your system that you make these antibodies for that we've been talking about that are going to be so destructive. In fact, there was a study that came out from a very well-known immunologist. I've known the lead researcher on that for more than 20 years. And what they did was they say, well, once we've got this antibody to the spike protein, does that antibody cross-react with other tissues? They tested 55 different tissue types, and what they found was that antibody cross-reacts with, I believe, 28 of them. And so that means that there's 28 different organs in your body that can be attacked by that antibody. That's why if you have 100 people standing in front of you that all got the shot, you could have 100 different sets of symptoms. It all depends on where that antibody attaches you. And the adenoviruses have in some papers have shown that adenoviruses themselves, there's more than 100 different strains, but that some of the adenoviruses that when they get into your system, they can turn on oncogenes. They can turn on genes that can cause cancer. In fact, I was reading a paper yesterday that said in the body of the paper, it said, we do not understand why more people haven't paid attention to the fact that adenoviruses can be oncogenic, meaning cancer causing. And so they've known this. I've been studying problems with vaccines for a little over 20 years. I've read thousands of papers, literally, and I've dug all of this stuff out of peer-reviewed mainstream medical literatures. It did not come from conspiratology.com. If I can read it, they can read it. They've got access. They've got teams of people that could be reading 10 times more articles than I can. And so if I can come up with 10 mechanisms of injury for this shot and this spike protein, there's probably more. That's just as many as I've been able to find so far. And they know all of this. I mean, we've seen so many reports now of thousands of people. You know, VAERS, as of February the 18th, the VAERS report has over 1,000 reported deaths. We know that that's about 10% of reports. So add 2 zeros to that. It could be anywhere from 10,000 to 100,000 deaths. We've had over 19,000 reported adverse events. Add a zero or two behind that. It could be anywhere from 190,000 to 1.9 million adverse events. And that's as of February the 18th. We started this on December the 10th. So in a little over 2 months, we have documented evidence of reports of people that have died that may be tens of thousands of more people. We know what's happening all over Europe. We know the lawsuits that are being filed to try to stop this. The FDA and the CDC have violated 3 areas of federal law to be able to authorize this emergency use of this shot at all. First of all, there are other therapies that can be used to treat this infection. Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, high-dose vitamin C, zinc, D, all of those things can treat it and prevent it. The second thing is, in order to get an emergency use authorization, the product that you're giving emergency use to without any studies or long-term studies at all has to be safer and less deadly than the infection itself. And the survival rate on this virus is 99.91%. It takes at least 6 weeks from the time you get your injection for the spike antibody to start to develop. So somewhere between 3 months and, quite frankly, 20 years. The immunologist that I've spoken to said over the next 10 years, we're going to see this go on in perpetuity because it can take anywhere from 2 years to 19 years to get full-blown autoimmune disease. I think we're going to see massive injuries and a lot more deaths start somewhere between 4 and 18 months from now.
Fear. The big fight wasn't the virus. It was the fear. Now, the fear has led to people, they really just want to go back to normal lives. So they're either kind of consumed with fear or consumed with just being weary of the whole situation. That is what I think is leading to people making what is really a fundamentally irrational decision to rush headlong towards an experimental medication. They just kind of want to get their lives back, right? We've been told, oh, get the vaccine, you'll get your life back. I have to give you the bad news. That is definitely not what's going to happen. Whether you take a shot or you don't take a shot, it's not going to happen. You know, Dr. Fauci has gone public already with saying, and as many others, the Surgeon General, many others have said, it was in Business Journal just today, Business Insider, I think, just today, you know, this so-called vaccine, experimental biological agent, actually doesn't stop transmission. You're going to have to keep going with the masks and the social distancing. It actually changes nothing. Once you hear that, you really have to question why you would put yourself in that situation. Let's just talk basics about the numbers. Okay, what is the chance that you'll survive COVID if you should get it? So if you're under age 20, according to the CDC, the survival rate is 99.997%. For ages 20 to 49, the survival rate is 99.98%. 50 to 69, their survival rate is 99.5%. I always kind of pause there because a lot of people in their 50s, they start to get worried and they think, oh my gosh, I'm in such a high risk group. It's not really that true. right? This is with no treatment, your survival is 99.5%. And if you're over 70, the survival rate approaches 95%, really with no treatment. The people who die from COVID-19 are people who are kind of destined to die in this period anyway. So my father had an expression, it was that pneumonia is an old man's best friend. And that means that pneumonia is often the way we exit this world. So if you are at kind of the end point of your life, COVID-19 can take you out. That's a fact. So can a common cold. I've seen it. I once had a patient in the ICU who died essentially from a nosebleed. Anything can take you out if you're frail. And COVID-19 is in that category. Overwhelmingly, the deaths of COVID-19 are in nursing home patients. Let's talk about these experimental biological agents. You might hear me use that phrase. Definitely you should not be calling this the COVID-19 vaccines. The reason is, whatever you call it, it's experimental. It's not been approved as a vaccine. It's currently in its investigational stage. It's been approved by the FDA, I assume, is the one who would approve it, but it's in an investigational stage only. AstraZeneca, Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson. That's very important legally. If you were to be injured by something and it's an experimental stage, it's adjudicated under a particular standard. What are the potential problems with this experimental biological agent? The first most obvious is that this is brand new technology. The first two that are coming to market use something called mRNA technology, which has never ever been used before for vaccines. So that's problem number one. Problem number two, there's been a tremendous failure of previous coronavirus vaccines. This is not well known. But there are multiple coronaviruses out there. For example, in 2002, there was an epidemic, a much smaller one, but an epidemic of SARS-CoV-1. What we're in right now is SARS-CoV-2. SARS-CoV-1 and SARS-CoV-2, by the way, you may have heard it called the novel coronavirus. So prior coronavirus vaccine attempts have been made. They have failed. They can't do it safely in human beings. And I'm going to talk more about that later. But just note that we've not been able to successfully overcome the human bodily hurdles that making a vaccine against a coronavirus has put up. Number three, there is no independently published animal studies. There's been a complete rush to put this to market, and you simply cannot do this safely without published data on animal studies, because animals often will die at the end, and unless we know that, we don't know if it's safe to give to humans. Problem number four is known complications. One of the most commonly known complications of vaccines is something called antibody-dependent enhancement. It's also sometimes called immune enhancement, and it's sometimes called pathogenic priming. What this is instead of really causing immunity, it causes a person to overreact in a negative way if they should ultimately be exposed to the virus. This thing called antibody-dependent enhancement or pathogenic priming, although you haven't heard of it, is well known to scientists. This is not fringe. This exists and this is real. The biggest problem with antibody-dependent enhancement, we see this with prior coronavirus vaccines. So when they were doing the studies with SARS-CoV-1 vaccine back in 2005, they came up with a vaccine and they gave it to the ferrets, and it was two dosed like the ones today, and the ferrets did fine after the first dose, they did fine after the second dose. Later they exposed them to the coronavirus SARS-CoV-1 in the wild, and the ferrets died. That's why SARS-CoV-1 vaccine never came to market. Antibody-dependent enhancement. So known complications include antibody-dependent enhancement and also some of the things you've seen in the news, like neurologic problems, like transverse myelitis, Bell's palsy, Guillain-Barré, etc. So what are the potential unknowns? Has anybody here heard of potential fertility problems with this vaccine? There's a question if this vaccine, a biological agent, I should say, affects this thing called the syncytial trophoblast, which is a layer on the placenta. It does seem to do that when you're sick with COVID-19. The problem is that these mRNA vaccines kind of mimic having COVID-19 indefinitely. So while COVID-19 could be bad for the placenta and the baby, if you get it like in the middle of the pregnancy, eventually COVID-19 goes away and you go about your life and then you're good. There's a question if this type of experimental agent does that same negative effect to the syncytial trophoblast layer of the placenta, and it would do it indefinitely. This is not a conspiracy. As a scientist, I'm telling you, we don't know. There's two guys in Europe that were ex-Pfizer executives that complained about this and filed a petition with the European equivalent of the FDA saying you've got to not approve this as an emergency experimental vaccine because we haven't answered the question on the antibody-dependent enhancement and we haven't answered the question on the placenta. Certainly in younger women, right, women under 50, the survival, we said, per the CDC, is 99.98%. We don't know what the effect is permanently on the placenta. Another fact that is very concerning is that pharmaceuticals who manufacture these experimental biological agents are immune from all liability. I'm not saying that they have a negative motive. I think mostly they have a profit motive. I'm not saying they're trying to hurt people or kill people. What I am saying is that if you know that you could be sued and pay out millions of dollars every single time something goes wrong, you're really, really careful. You're a little less careful if you know you're going to be shielded from that liability, and they're completely shielded. So when people ask me, you know, am I going to take the vaccine? Would I recommend my children take the vaccine? I said, it's really irrational to take a brand new, untested, untried technology from a company that's completely shielded from immunity. Those are the safety concerns with this experimental biological agent. What are the concerns regarding the effectiveness? Now, what's super shocking is that there's no proof that this biological agent actually stops the transmission. By the way, that's not in dispute now that I'm telling you that. The Surgeon General gave an interview to Good Morning America stating that, and it's been well documented now. It is not known if it stops transmission. There's been no proof that this is actually reducing mortality, certainly from the levels of non-lethality that we're seeing, it would be hard to demonstrate that there's any real advantage, right? Odds of dying from this illness are already incredibly low. The third question about its effectiveness, we simply don't know, even if it was effective and not dangerous, we don't know how long it lasts. In other words, are you going to be asked to take this vaccine once in a lifetime, or are you going to be asked to take this vaccine yearly like influenza? We don't know. Those questions are not answered.
Why do we have vaccines? We have vaccines because we didn't have treatment for smallpox. We didn't, and it was a very deadly disease. That made sense to have a vaccine. We didn't have treatment for polio initially, so made sense to have a vaccine. But this, even without doing anything, this disease has a 99.991% chance of survival in last viral season. I'll call it a viral season because it really isn't just a flu season anymore. But, you know, in the winter season, that's what our last season, that's what our horrible, including New York and everything, that was the overall survival in the world. As opposed to a standard viral flu season, it's 99.992%. You see the big difference. This RNA thing, it doesn't prevent transmission by their own admission, okay? And even if it did, it is created to act on the warhead part of this deal, the spike protein. So next year, these guys and these bioweapons, which one of the other things I learned, sadly, is that there are these bioweaponeers all over the country and that we literally have funded them. We've literally funded, think about this, we have funded a PLA virologist to come and work in our Army bioweapons lab. That is the height of insanity or treason.
And the PLA is People's Liberation Army, for the folks out there not familiar with
the Chinese,
communist China. Yep.
Right, right. I mean, it went, under the Clinton administration, by the way, it was completely illegal to have non-aligned foreign students. So if you were from Iran or someplace that was not one of our allies, you couldn't even work in a biology lab that worked with lesser pathogens, you know, any pathogens that could be used as a bioweapon. So suddenly we've gone from that stance under the Clinton administration to under the Obama administration, actually funding PLH, Chinese communist virologists, to work in our bioweapons lab. It's absolute insanity. Even if you believe this type of vaccine will work, which I don't, even if you believe that, it's not a permanent solution. Viruses are all around us. They're part of nature. We lived with them for millennia. We'll live them for them. Hopefully, if we survive all this, we'll live another few millennia with them. But, you know, we have to have a solution that doesn't involve a vaccine. So I always tell people, you know, I'm not going to tell you whether to get a vaccine or not. You have to make your decision up, but you should be allowed to have informed consent. So if you look at the history of these vaccines just real quickly, These are experimental biologics. I don't even like to call them vaccines because classically how vaccines work is this. You grow a bunch of the pathogens. So let's say it's measles. You grow the measles in a vat or in eggs. And then you take a portion of that and you make it less strong. You attenuate it. You make it weaker. And there's different ways of doing that. And then you inject it into people, and their own immune system sees that weakened pathogen, and then they react to it just enough that it puts it in their immunologic memory. And then when they're exposed to it the next time, they memorize it, and theoretically they can then better respond. That's what your real body does when it gets sick. You're just without all this vaccination stuff. You get sick with a virus, you get perfect lifelong immunity for the most part, and it's over, okay? So, but how is this different? Well, this is not, they're not giving you a pathogen or a piece of a pathogen or a small piece with an adjuvant, which is a chemical that makes your immune system react more. What they're doing is programming mRNA. And mRNA is a little piece of, it's like DNA, but it's the messenger RNA. It's what makes proteins in the body. It's kind of like a computer chip that you put into a 3D printer, and then you tell it what you want it to make, and it prints it out, right? That we have that in engineering. And this is the biologic equivalent. I make some mRNA, and it tells your body to produce certain things. Well, in this case, what they've done, they've made a piece of this mRNA to create in every cell of your body that spike protein, or at least part of it. And that spike protein, you're actually creating the pathogen in your body. So, you know, this is where it gets a little wishy about how much of that spike protein is actually being created. And I don't know how to find that. I can't find that, but I'm sure somebody knows. What happens is the problem, and this is the problem, and I'll tell you what happened in the animal studies. There have been 4 different vaccines and 3 different animal studies that I know of, in ferrets, cats. Cats have a natural thing with the coronavirus. So it's cats and ferrets, and I think something else. They started after SARS, they did cats. And then after MERS, they did, which are all coronavirus pathogens that are more deadly. And they after MERS, they tried it in ferrets and something else. And what happened is all the animals died. It wasn't subtle, okay? But they didn't die of the vaccine. What they died from was called immune enhancement or antibody-induced enhancement or antibody-dependent enhancement. They call it ADE now, but they used to call it immune enhancement. Here's what happens. So they make the RNA, and so you're getting ready with this. You get the vaccine, and you do fine, all right? Now you challenge the animal with the virus that you're supposed to be immunizing against. So when they challenged those cats with SARS, what happened is instead of killing the virus or, you know, weakening, what they did is your this stylized immuno response that they've built into your system went out and coded the virus. So the virus came into the cat's body like a Trojan horse, unseen by the cat's own immune system. And then it replicated without checking and killed the cat with overwhelming sepsis and cardiac failure. Happened in the ferrets. That happened every time they've tried this. And so let me just point out, we have never made it through an animal study successfully for this type of virus. We have never done this in humans before. At least we haven't. Maybe the Chinese have, and I'll talk about that in a second. But that's why we don't really have a track record of success. This vaccine was rolled out to distribution centers before they even made a show of caring about the FDA approving it. Do you realize that? I mean, it went out for distribution. I know in Nebraska, it was in the distribution center within days before the FDA even said they were going to approve it. I mean, I've never seen that happen before. And the longest they've really followed people after the vaccine is 2 months. Well, you see, that's not enough time to know that we won't have that antibody enhancement problem. 5 or 6 things. I have a little COVID kit in my office. It's NAC, vitamin C, vitamin D, zinc, selenium, and quercetin, 6 things. And if you do that, you can improve your immune response and your immune, your own ability to fight this off and not get terribly sick. I would say if you want to get out of the pandemic right now, it's really easy. You turn off your TV, you take off your mask, you reopen your business, and you live your life.